I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
If you've wondered about the money side of our move and recent home sales, today we're answering some of your most asked questions. Also, a series of unfortunate toilet-related events and the home milestone that's making everyone cry.
We said last week on the podcast that this was going to be the week that we were moving, the first week of May.
Famous last words.
Yep, no sooner did we say that than we found out that it's not going to happen. We're actually probably going to move next week, the second week of May, if all goes right.
Yeah, now I'm like, I don't know when I'm moving. I'm just going to wait by the phone for the call. At some point, someone's going to say, it's ready, come on down. Because we can only blame the floors for this delay, guys. Something so surprising happened. Even the floor refinisher was like, I've never seen this before. The pine floors at the Florida house, as he was sanding them down, started to look a little strange to him. And he realized that at some point in this house's history, someone had patched some areas, but not with the same flooring. So the entire downstairs we knew was regular pine, and the entire upstairs is heart pine. But I think at the point at which someone made the upstairs heart pine, the downstairs was patched with heart pine.
Maybe this is not the first time they've had to patch because of water issues.
Yes.
But we talked it through with the contractor and the flooring guy. And because we were just going to be using a clear sealer on the floors, like we weren't staining it a color, they concluded that there was no way we were going to be able to hide the difference in the flooring material. So the only solution was to actually take those heart pine patches out and patch it with matching pine.
Right. And the funny thing is he had already sourced some matching pine for the gaps in the floor. Remember, we had holes in the floor we had to fill. But little did he know at that point he should have sourced kind of double that, and then he could have fixed these stripe portions. But it is all going to be patched and look beautiful when we clear seal it. They're going to be lovely. Knock on all the wood. I have to do it or I'm worried it's not going to work.
You did that last episode and it didn't work.
Okay, well, I'm doing it again. The point is, it took about 4 extra days, which pushed us over into a different week. You know, it like rolled us over on the calendar. But obviously, we don't want to move in with striped floors in certain areas. It just had to be done.
Well, and at some point, our contractor thought he was going to be able to make up some time, but we just keep having these little things pop up, like the toilet. Who would ever thought a toilet would cause this many issues? Like, you know, we have this favorite toilet that we just put up in our master bathroom here, and we're putting it again in our Florida house. And so we've ordered it plenty of times.
Yeah. So it's like a 2-piece toilet. It has like a tank on the top and a bowl on the bottom. And then you add the seat. This time we found it all together. Sometimes it comes with a seat, sometimes it doesn't. But we found it the cheapest this time at Home Depot. We put in the order, we mailed it to the contractor. He installed it. Then he said, oh my gosh, you won't believe this, but they gave us the wrong seat. And he sent a picture and it was so funny. It was like, looked like a bulldog, like an underbite, because the toilet has an elongated bowl, but the seat was like a round, shorter seat. So it, like, if you can picture a toilet seat that doesn't even fully cover the mouth of the toilet bowl, that's what it looked like. It was like, we all laughed about it. It looked so funny.
It had like a little pouty lip.
It really did. And he was like, no biggie, my guy's gonna go back to Depot. We'll figure it out. But then the next day I got another text and it was like, oh my gosh, a different part of the toilet is wrong too. And he said he hadn't seen it in person, but when he saw it in person, he noticed after his plumber installed the toilet that the bowl of the toilet was like a cream color and the tank was a white color. So not only did they send us the wrong toilet seat, they also sent us the wrong toilet bowl.
I think everyone was so distracted by the toilet seat issue that they didn't notice that the color of the tank and the bowl were slightly off.
Yes, it was like a cream color. And I was like, no. And he was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting so frustrated by this. This should have been like a half hour job. Like, John and I can install a toilet. We don't even really need him to install the toilet, except that we want a functional bathroom the minute we arrive.
Yeah.
Because we anticipate the children like running in after a long car ride and needing to use the toilet.
Well, and then on top of that, when they went to go back and get another one from Home Depot, it was suddenly out of stock and back ordered at Home Depot. So we had to go source it elsewhere online to get it delivered. So it was like this whole thing that shouldn't have been a thing.
Yeah, it was 2 days ago. The toilet arrived today online. They shipped it real fast. I didn't even pay expedited shipping. They had a lot on hand, so it wasn't back ordered everywhere, which I'm really excited about because I would have been so upset if it was like, okay, you can't have your favorite toilet. I'd be like, but there's nothing else. There's no other toilet I love than this toilet.
The stores are out of hand sanitizer, wipes,
toilet paper, and this toilet.
Yes, and this specific toilet.
No, but we found it. We're so excited. And as of, I think, this afternoon, they're installing it and all shall be well. that was not a super long delay. It was just kind of felt like an extra fire drill.
Right. And so, yes, it is disappointing that our move has gotten pushed back and there seem to be these last little things that are just keeping us from getting to the finish line. But I guess the good news is that even though we have to spend an additional week here in Richmond in sort of our quote-unquote glamping thing in our house, you know, where we don't have all of our stuff or most of our furniture and we're just kind of living bare bones. But, you know, we're a week into living like this and it hasn't been that bad, really. I mean, again, we have beds. We kept enough kitchen stuff that we can cook meals and then we'll just bring that stuff in the car with us. So it could be worse, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say that there's a few things I miss that if I could do this all over again, I would have just left our cutting board. Multiple times a day I go to use it. We have a little plastic one in a drawer, but I just loved our wood one that was out on the counter. I didn't realize how much I used it, so I would have just kept that. Big deal. I could have stored it in the car and driven it there. The other thing I really miss, which doesn't make any sense to have kept because it was too much work, was our entire junk drawer. I never realized how often I swing open that drawer and grab any of a thousand things. You know, I need a highlighter, I need a scissors. And now that drawer is fully empty. Remember, we packed up our whole kitchen and left like a pot and a pan and not even the cutting board.
I think what you miss about the junk drawer is not its absence because we did keep some essentials from the junk drawer, but they're now in a big Ziploc bag. And so it is so annoying to get them out because they're like all buried under stuff. So I think there's a reason why people don't have a junk bag. They have a junk drawer.
I agree. It's a very inefficient storage system. We just thought it'd be like a week or two. Now it's going to be three. I mean, at this point, no one knows what day it is anyway. What's one more week?
Right, true. Although it is funny that in all of this, you know, our move date has been pushed back, but our pod arrived to Florida early. It's not at our property. It's at like the warehouse in Florida. But if you remember, the people at Pods had told us like it could be around 2 weeks or so for your items to travel from your original location to your new location. Because not only are they just literally going, in this case, from Virginia to Florida, but they have to go from our house to our local warehouse, then from the local warehouse to the Florida warehouse, and then Florida warehouse to our home in Florida. So like there's multiple stops and that's why they say you should expect, I think they said at least 2 weeks for the travel.
Yeah. And they also say like there are only 2 days a week they will deliver in our new county. So like if you miss it and it's like a Sunday, you can't get it again till the next Wednesday. And so putting that in mind, we're like, man, it might be 2.5 weeks. So it's like hilarious when we check the status. It's like, you know how you can watch your pizza delivery go, you know, being prepared out for delivery.
Right.
This was like that. And you can go on the Pods website and it's like Florida, it's made it to Florida. And we were like, what?
Yes, it made it to their Florida warehouse in 2 days. So we could have had it delivered to our home in Florida a week ago, like a week ago Monday. So our pod is really ahead of us on this move.
Yeah, the pod's just living its best life in Florida. And we're like, when can we get there? Just waiting by the phone.
I have to stop myself from thinking like, if I had known all these things, which we couldn't have known, like we didn't know about this flooring delay. We didn't know the pod would be so fast. But had we known it, like we could have kept our things here for a couple more weeks to time it a bit better.
Yeah, I'm actually happy that we got the packing out of the way. That was like a big thing weighing on me. And one interesting thing that John and I have noticed, and we both noticed it, was I don't know if you guys saw the post we did last week on the blog, but it was a video tour that we took right before our showings of our house, like our real estate showings. So every room was fully decorated. John walked around with the camera and filmed a little tour. And we put that up in a post, like our final after tour of the house. And the funny thing now is that when we put it in the post, obviously we watched the video and John adds music to it and all that.
And I should point out that video was taken, I guess, the first week of March.
Yeah, there's no leaves on the trees outside, which is so funny to me because now it's like so green.
Yeah, so our house hasn't really looked that full for 2 months. And right now, post-packing, it looks very empty. So when we watched that video together last week, the contrast between what we're living with versus what was in that video was very severe.
I know, I was like, the house looks so full. Like I almost was grossed out by all the stuff in the house. And I know I really loved it at the time, but I think your eyes adjust so quickly. Like now that our house is basically half full and has been for the last few weeks, it is weird to watch the video of it all full because it almost feels too full. Like our eyes have fully adjusted to this house being a lot less packed. And I don't know, I kind of like the, like I'm hoping our new house can feel airier and less full. I don't want it to look unfinished or half done. But I like the blank surfaces and like the breathing room.
Yeah, I think the video felt a little cluttered to me. I was like, wow, we had a lot of stuff in that room. Like we had really filled every surface. And I don't think it was necessarily bad. Like I wouldn't be sad if our Florida house ended up having that vibe over time. Like if it felt like it was full and cozy and all those things. Not cluttered, but I think the house did look very good when we sold it. It just feels overwhelmed with stuff now that we've adjusted to it being so empty. It also gives me comfort that for the time we live in Florida, and it's going to be empty for a while as we, you know, furnish it and figure out the place for everything and get art on the walls, like we know that's going to be a process. And I think I was a little bit nervous about the discomfort of that stage. You know, we've been in this house for so long where it's felt comfortable and everything had its place and things were feeling finished, that I wasn't exactly looking forward to that time that we're entering in the Florida house where it's not going to be that way for a while. And so I think realizing that actually living here in this unfinished, kind of empty state is okay made me feel more comfortable about being in that state in Florida for a while.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, I think it's really good timing because I did a lot of downsizing before we packed the pod. And, you know, if I had five vases, I picked my two favorite and I left some here and I gave some to friends. You know, like whatever I could do to downsize has happened once, but I'm renewed in my commitment to that because I love the blank surfaces and I love this sort of minimalistic, clean, easy, breezy feeling. So I think if we land at the Florida house and it feels like, ugh, I still have too many things, there might be just a second wave of decluttering if I find that I still have too much stuff because I'm like reinvigorated and Remotivated to get to that, like, we can just dash out and go have fun, not like, oh, I have to organize my vase drawer.
Right.
We all save too many vases, guys. We get them for free and then we're like, ooh, I got this bouquet and it has this clear vase. Why not? But we always use the same dang vase. We have a favorite and we have ones we never touch. Get rid of the ones you don't touch.
Let the record state, as we were packing, I said, I think we have more vases than we need.
The irony is that I kept one here because I was going to give it to the new homeowner. As a side note, guys, I asked her if she wanted me to style things with extra decor. And she was like, oh, yes, please. Like, don't leave your decor for someone if you're moving unless they expressly want it. But I put a big branch in it on the counter. And then I said to John, uh-oh, I think I have to bring this vase because I like it so much. I will carry it on my lap like a baby.
That's what you say to everything I say we don't have room for. You're like, I'll just put it on my lap. Sherry's going to have a very full lap for 13 hours on the drive to Florida.
Guys, don't doubt me. If I set my mind to something, I will do it.
Says the person who has to pee nonstop.
That's why I bought the pee bags.
You just keep one under the vase.
Yeah.
That's what the vase is for.
I'll use the vase for that. Multitasking.
Gross.
I know you come here for the body humor and we deliver.
Well, next up, I have what could either be a can we just talk about or a game. I wasn't sure what I should qualify it as. What do you suggest?
Me? Yeah. John has told me nothing about this, guys. He said, I'm going to spring it on you on the podcast. Let's call it a game.
Okay. What if I said, can we just talk about this game? No reaction?
I mean, it's a dad joke. I expect nothing less.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is a one question game.
Oh.
That's why it wasn't much of a game.
Okay, so I either get an A or an F.
Exactly. There was a survey done by Zillow last year, and their conclusion was that more than a third of Americans do this while selling their home.
Oh, I don't get multiple choice, or I do?
I'm going to play this like you did it last week.
Okay, just a willy-nilly quiz.
See if you can fill in the blanks. If it doesn't work out, I'll give you some options.
Okay, what was the percentage again?
I think it's actually 36%.
Do this?
Yes, do blank while selling their home.
What about decluttering?
No.
That sounded like I'm a little bit close.
No, I just wasn't sure if I should give you a better clue then. Nope.
I think you should give me a better clue because I'm out of ideas.
How about this? It's an emotion.
Oh, they cry?
Yes.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Well, they said they did a survey about the home selling process and found that it was one of the most stressful experiences that people go through, second only to a breakup.
So their distinction is selling, not buying, right? We have certainly found that buying feels a lot less painful than selling.
Yes, and this was specifically about selling. They said that people found selling more stressful than planning a wedding, Getting fired, or becoming a parent.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, our first house sale was hard. That was a hard situation.
I was going to say, I think we probably fall into this category, at least you. I'm not much of a crier, but
I cried over the duplex falling through with our friends and just like everything going belly up after almost the entire 30 days right before the close it fell through, and it just felt so sad.
Well, it says 20% of people shed tears 5 times or more.
Ooh, I don't know if I did it 5 times.
I think you might have fallen in that category for our first home sale.
Our first home sale was so hard, guys, so hard. But we were just crying over frustration of like buyer and realtor demands because we were selling by owner.
Yes.
But the other party was buying with a realtor.
Yes. And it was a very, let me choose my word kindly. The realtor was a very...
Well, she advocated for her, yeah, her buyer.
I was going to say bulldog, which is who you want on your side as a realtor. But being on the receiving end of that, especially when it was our first time selling a home, it was hard to be the recipient of that energy.
Yes.
One of the things that made our first sale so stressful was that it was a kind of domino sale with the purchase of our second house. So like we couldn't buy our second house until the closing for our first house happened. And then also that was the same for the people whom we were buying the second house from. They were purchasing a third house, I guess, in the chain, and they couldn't close on their house until they sold the house to us. So it felt like we had a lot of pressure on our shoulders to make sure the sale of our first house, because our house was the first sale in the chain, we had to make that happen in order for everyone else to get what they wanted. And so there was a lot to juggle. There were a lot of demands we had to meet that we weren't sure were totally reasonable, but we wanted the second house so badly. We wanted the other people to have their house. Like it was a tough situation to be in. And
then John hit a mailbox with a truck in the snow, just on top of that.
Then I drove into a ditch with our moving truck. That was probably the fifth set of tears. I probably pushed us over the brink right then.
Oh my gosh, I was loopy by that point.
But I think you're right that the majority of these tears are not because of the emotions of selling the house or missing the house or leaving a house. It's because of the stress of the process. Like the survey, I guess, said that 70% of people were stressed by the uncertainty of the sale price. 69% were stressed over selling it in a desired time frame, mm-hmm, and 65% were stressed over the offer falling through. Oh, and another 65%. These are all like 65 to 70%. The last one was people who are stressed about fixing up their home for sale.
Right. I would add a huge category to that, which is stressed about showings. Showings are so stressful if you have kids and a dog or even just a house that you have to pack up every time someone decides to traipse through and look at it. And then over time they look at it and they don't offer. You're like, oh my gosh, I am scrambling every time the phone rings to get the house ready. Someone's walking through, it might not even result in an offer. I know all about it, guys. It can be really grating. So I think it totally tracks that people feel frustration in selling. It's a very hard thing to do. At one point, guys, we were selling three houses not that long ago, maybe 2 months ago. And I remember when all this pandemic stuff was happening, I just felt like this will never go through. Like we will never get to the point where we just have one house.
Yes.
That's why still to this day, I am so grateful. And if you're out there going through that right now, we feel for you. And we totally can appreciate that. It's like one of the harder things to do.
Yes. And now, according to this survey, you can feel comfortable if you have to cry over it, if you need to release some of that stress, because it's normal. A third of people cry during the home selling process, and 20% cry five times or more.
I mean, if you're going to cry once, what's five times? Just keep it right? going.
Just nonstop tears through just the like entire thing.
A solid cry for about a month till closing.
Right. That's the way to do it.
Next, for the main segment of the podcast, as John likes to define each of these segments, I just kind of ramble on and who knows where I'll end up. But I do know that the main segment is a question we receive so often. It's usually a private email or DM. It's like something nobody wants to ask publicly, but everyone is really wondering about this. So just due to popular demand, like tons and tons of requests to talk about this, we thought we would address sort of the financial aspects of selling the three houses. John's going to read someone's question now because I am rambling.
Right. I was like, should I say this person's name now? You said a lot of people are asking privately.
Well, her name's Anna, but how many people are named Anna?
Oh, geez. Now Anna knows it's her. Okay. No, Anna asked this question very nicely. She said, how is this move impacting you financially? Is the cost of buying a Florida home more because of the area / proximity to the beach? Are you simplifying in hopes of spending less / saving more in other areas or retiring early? Interested in whatever you're comfortable sharing. Thanks. Heart emoji.
Yes. So sweet. I love it when people say like whatever you feel comfortable talking about, because we don't always talk about everything. I always tell people, I'll tell the entire internet things. I'll tell my whole family at a dinner table. But if I won't tell my whole family something, I'm not going to tell the whole internet that.
Yes, because money is an uncomfortable topic. We don't talk to our family about a lot of this stuff. But here's the gist of it. Yes, the real estate in Florida is more expensive, at least in the area in which we bought, because it's so close to the beach. But the cost of that house was in no way equal to the cost of the houses we sold. It actually was comparable in cost to what we sold our primary home here in Richmond for.
Well, it was $150,000 more. So like comparable might be a sketchy term to use, but by no means the cost of all three houses added up, just the cost of our Richmond house plus about $150,000.
Right. So we could have taken the combined funds from our houses in Virginia and bought a larger house in Florida if we wanted. But kind of as Anna implied in her question, like our goal here is simplifying. It's not about accumulating more or bigger. And so we put that into a smaller house. I mean, yes, we're getting a house about half the size of this one, and it's more expensive than this one. So like, clearly the cost per square foot is quite different in Florida.
But I think the thing that's really nice is, and we've shared this with you guys before, is it episode 58?
I don't know.
We'll put it in the show notes. In episode, we talked about how we paid off this house. So the greatest thing we ever did is since we bought our first house was that 15 years ago, 14 years ago?
14 years ago.
14 years ago, since then, we've been overpaying our mortgage whenever we can. We got 15-year mortgages, which are faster to pay down. We've only ever owned one car. Like, we make certain sacrifices to try to put money into the house where they could have been put into, like, you know, fancier cars or more than one car or fancier vacations for our family. And so by paying off this house, it meant that everything we got in the sale of this house could roll over towards the Florida house's mortgage. And it basically left us with $150,000 beyond that, that was still outstanding on the mortgage. And once the duplex and the pink house closed, we had extra funds that we could use to pay down the rest of the mortgage. So we now own the Florida house completely outright, which feels really good. You know, we don't take that for granted. We've worked towards that for a long time and we're really grateful for it. And we also had obviously extra funds beyond that, that we have put into like two categories, I would say.
Yes. So category one is that we're using some of those excess funds to go towards the renovations of the Florida house. Like I said a moment ago, we looked at some more expensive houses, but that would have left us less room to make improvements, to furnish it, to decorate it. And we knew that we wanted a space that we could put our stamp on. So it was nice to find something that was a little less expensive and under budget of what we could have afforded so that we have this cushion to use on renovations and furnishings and decorating. Like that, I think, has been kind of our MO in all of our house sales, is to buy under our means. Like instead of financially stretching ourselves when you buy a home, to actually purchase something that's cheaper than you're approved for your loan, so that you have that cushion and you have that extra room to spend money, whether it is on the house or on other things or towards savings. So we've always tried to do that, and Florida was no exception. We bought a house that we knew we could afford without stretching. And so it left us that extra funds to, again, use for a category one, which are renovations. And then category two are sort of the general savings, smart things to do as an adult type thing. You know, put money in your retirement fund, put things in your kids' college fund. Those are things we had been doing over the last few years best we could. But I will be honest, we've been mostly financially focused on the renovations out in Cape Charles, you know, the beach house and the duplex. And so those things have taken a lot of our energy and a lot of our financial energy. And so it feels good to now be in a place where I think we can level out our spending a bit more. I mean, of course, we are going to have some big renovation costs still ahead of us in the Florida house, but it doesn't feel as all-consuming as sometimes the renovations out in Cape Charles did.
Yeah. I mean, I think the easiest way to describe it would be it feels a lot more financially minimized. Like, it is cheaper to carry one smaller house instead of four, because the duplex was two houses. We were paying double utilities, double taxes, all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think those are the sorts of decisions that drove us actually to make this move, is we were not only trying to simplify our stuff and our space and our stresses, but we did want this to be a financially simplifying decision as well, where we were only having to carry the financials of one house, whether that's utilities, maintenance, all those things. I think if you guys heard our episode last fall where we talked to Tanya Hester, and I'll link it in the show notes if you missed it, but she was someone who retired early. And I know Anna asked if this was like all part of some retire early scheme. It's not. I don't think that's a particular goal of ours, but we are looking to just be financially secure, which is something I think everyone wants, especially these days. And so I think one kind of switch we had in our thinking is that probably for most of our adult lives, I would say, we're kind of operating on, I don't know if this would be considered the American dream approach, but like this idea that if you accumulate more, if you earn more, if you own more, like that's your path to success. That's your path to wealth or whatever.
Right. Or at least financial security. Like the more houses I have, the better off financially I'll be.
Yeah. I think we literally thought that when we were buying the duplex, and we pictured the duplex as maybe the first in a chain of rental properties we owned. And that would be our safety net or our college fund or something like that. I think we thought the accumulation of more was how we check that box of financial security. But in talking to Tanya, we also heard this idea that another path to financial security is to desire less or to spend less or to need less. And I think that really flipped a switch in our thinking, because that is true. I mean, you don't need to accumulate more if your needs don't become more.
Right. I think another way to look at it was like, if you add up the square footage of this house and the pink house and the duplex, it's 7,000 square feet.
Give or take.
Give or take. So that is all space that we're paying taxes on, we're maintaining, we're paying for insurance, we're paying utilities. We're heating and cooling that duplex in the off season when no one's in it. And so we've gone from 7,000 square feet to 1,400 square feet, guys. We've gone from owning like an acre and a half of land to 0.1 acres of land. So like in all aspects of like yard work, paperwork, money, stress, like all of it, we feel like not only are we like downsizing and simplifying our objects, but it feels like we're like taking things off the cafeteria tray of life. Like we are really simplifying what we have to do.
Ah, that beautiful cafeteria tray of life.
Put it on a t-shirt, maybe a bumper sticker.
So I think that hopefully gives you a little bit of a peek into the financial side of this decision we made and why we made the decision. It was certainly intentional, both for all the minimizing and simplifying reasons we've talked about, but also for the financial reasons. So I hope that helps for all those who are asking. We will put in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast some of the things we referenced, like our episode about how we paid off our mortgage and also that conversation we had with Tanya Hester.
Okay, but now we're going to talk about what we're digging. I am digging something that is a rainbow delight in my life.
Sherry never thinks these through ahead of time.
I just let my mouth kind of roam. I just like figure it out as each word comes out. Right now, I don't even know where my mouth is going. But this week I'm digging a delightful rainbow vitamin organizer. I have to give everyone at home kudos, because you're the ones who kept saying, oh my gosh, like a bunch of you were like, why don't you have a pill case for your vitamins? And I was like, I don't know. Who am I? Like a grandma? I don't know about these pill cases.
Ooh, burn grandmas.
Burn. I don't know. It just felt like, why do I need a pill case? I'm a grown woman. I can open each vitamin and pop it. And like, I take supplements because I have a kidney thing that goes on, and like, we both take multivitamins and like vitamin C and stuff. So I was like, big deal. I open a few containers every morning. Takes me a minute. This totally falls under the like sticking points things we've talked about, or like feeling extra efficient. Now I spend like the same amount of time I would take opening them each morning for one dose, but I do like 7 days in a row for myself and 7 days in a row for John, because the pill organizer has 14 slots. It has like a week on one side and a week on the other side. And with a Sharpie, I just do an S on my side and a J on John's side, so we can tell, you know, which side is whose vitamins. And it is just delightful. Every morning I push the button. I wish I had it in front of me, because you would hear the satisfying sound. You click the button and just one like separated compartment opens up, and it's like flicka, 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 flicka.
I love how you're describing what a pill container does for people.
Hey guys, it's a rainbow. It's a Roy G. Biv delicious little looking thing. It fits all of my vitamins. It's not like teeny for one. It's good sized. And I will put it in the show notes. It's like $10.50 or something like that. It has made my mornings feel super efficient. I love it for traveling, because now I don't have to bring all the bottles. I just have this one thing with everything in it. It totally falls under, didn't think I needed it till I had it. And now I'm just like singing the praises to you on my podcast, because it has changed my mornings.
You could just take the Lisa Renner approach and do a big Ziploc bag.
I appreciate your reference point, John.
I do what I can.
Is he a keeper, guys, or what?
Who's really a keeper is what I'm digging this week. Another John. John Krasinski from The Office.
He is a keeper.
Have you guys been watching the YouTube series he has started during the pandemic called Some Good News, or SGN? It's like a news show he produces from his home. His daughters made the logo. They like colored on poster board. It's very homemade looking in a super charming way. And I guess he started it. There's like maybe 5 or 6 episodes now. I'll put some of them in the show notes. But he just treats it like a news show where he's sharing uplifting stories from these times. You know, people who are doing essential work, people who are finding fun ways to stay connected or show appreciation or love for one another. Like, it's just a very charming, uplifting, family-friendly little YouTube series. I think each episode is like around maybe 15 minutes. We've watched a few with our kids, some on our own. And I would say it's like escalating each week in terms of like what he takes on and like the production value. Like, he threw an internet prom for all of the teenagers who are not getting their proms this year.
And it was so sweet, you guys. Yeah, I like that he's like, oh, that could be hard to do in a week from home. I'll do it. Like, he's game for all these deep things. He's had like really big stars on it and they're like Skyping in from home. Like you said, the production quality is good. Like, you can hear everyone, but it's very homemade looking. Like, nobody is in a studio. And that's why we love it.
Well, and just like finding literally, as he calls it, some good news to read, because a lot of the news out there is not fun to read. Not only is it entertaining, but to hear some of these stories and get sort of an injection of positivity. And like Sherry said, he's getting these celebrities involved now. Like, he did a segment in a recent episode where he was getting people's like quarantine recipes, like their favorite chili that they make or their quarantini recipe, and then surprising the person who had this recipe go viral with a celebrity chef who made the recipe. So there was a woman who had made pierogies, I think.
Yes, and Martha Stewart pops onto Skype and is like, I loved your pierogies. And the woman's like crying. It's just, it's so cute. That episode was great too, because they raised like $3 million for restaurant workers who are out of work right now. It's just like such a great mission and such a sweetly executed and like lovable way to do it. And also, I won't spoil it, but I really like the bottom half of his wardrobe in every episode.
It's what I'm wearing right now.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And even though we're not in Florida yet, we're going to go ahead and share some renovation progress pictures from our contractor on the blog this week so you can see how things have been evolving. So stay tuned for that on Wednesday.
Yes, and keep telling us what you do while you listen, like Suzanne on Instagram, who listened while donating her plasma to help others fight COVID-19.
Speaking of which, if you want to be like Suzanne, Tom Hanks, or the other plasma donors out there, there's more information on sites like FDA.gov and RedCross.org.
And here's a weird segue. Over at younghouselove.com/podcast, we have things like a photo of the sanded, not so perfect floors in our Florida house and that toilet with the underbite.
Yeah, and in that picture of the toilet, you can see a sneak peek of our newly tiled floors.
Shiny, shiny.
Actually, dusty, dusty.
Later.
Bye.
I feel like we should open the podcast with a little 1990s Gwen Stefani impression.
You know what? That's not necessary.
I'm just a girl in the world.
What if we close the podcast with it instead?
Oh, I'm just a girl. I cry by laughing, and they won't let me something at night.
Do you want to look up the actual lyrics?
I don't know the words, but I feel like the energy was there.
Okay.